Hello, it is the Little Mental Health Project. Happy New Year because wow, it has been that long. The last time we recorded was in November, actually, 2021. Welcome back, guys. I am, as usual, with my favorite co-host.
Hey.
Your name.
Hey, it's Meanwhile. Sorry. Hey, I thought you were gonna like say, okay, it's Meanwhile. Hi, everybody. I have missed this. You know what I mean? It has been a long time coming. Like,
It
I
has
have really,
been.
really missed this. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kalina, for introducing, for opening up for us. And today, I am so excited, guys. Let me not lie. Our topic for today, we're talking men's health, men's mental health, but then with a specific focus on substance use disorder and addiction. And we have someone very special with us today, like a special guest, and his name is Manota Mpande. Manota, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi everybody. Happy New Year. Thank you very much for getting me onto your program. I think Maya has already mentioned my name. I'll mention it again. My name is Manota Mpande. I'm an addict in recovery, and I have been in recovery, full recovery, for the last 4 years.
Wow.
Amazing. Manota, just to get into it, can you tell us a little bit about like what substances you are on, what your journey and what your relationship looked like with those substances?
The substance I used and abused, I always say, was marijuana. I was on marijuana probably from about, I'm 48 this year. So I was on marijuana from most likely from about 23 years old. That's when I probably started taking it on a daily basis when I was 23 years old. Alcohol, I most likely started taking alcohol at the age of about 15, 16 is when I started drinking. So you can do the maths as well. I've been sober, totally sober of both marijuana and alcohol the last 4 years. So a good chunk of my life, I used and eventually became to abuse both alcohol and marijuana. Even though, I mean, some people do dispute that you can't be addicted to marijuana per se, but I can honestly say, on my part, on my personal part, I was addicted to it because I was not able to stay away from it. It was something that I would wake up, and the first thing I did, even before I brushed my teeth, was to go out and have a joint. And it was the last thing I did before I went to sleep, before I literally closed my eyes, was also smoke a joint, So I can honestly say to myself, that I was addicted to marijuana. Alcohol, I drank it for a very long period of time, and it got to a point where I would wake up, I think right at the end of my, let's say, of my journey with addiction. I think I'd probably wake up, and the first thing I wanted to do as well was to have a drink, and got to a point where in the evening I could not sleep properly if I hadn't had a drink that day. So that's been the basic journey of my use and abuse of both alcohol and marijuana. And I think it got to a point where both these substances affected me mentally. That is something that didn't happen overnight. That is something that gradually creeped up on me, and it's something that initially I did not accept, even though so many people had pointed it out to me. It's not something that I came to accept very easily, that both the alcohol and the marijuana use and abuse eventually caused me to have several mental, I'd say, yeah, several mental and probably emotional breakdowns I had in maybe the last 10 years of the use and abuse of both these substances?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for sharing that and for being extremely vulnerable with us and just, you know, sharing your journey. I'm just going to like quickly ask a follow-up question, unless I missed it, but I'd like to know, what led to you starting, you know, the use of drugs? Like, was there something that, you know, made you decide, okay, this is the path I want to take? Or it was one of those things that you were just doing socially, and then before you knew it, you lost a grip on it?
I don't think there's, okay, because I've kind of understood it a lot more now, growing up after my last, I went to rehabilitation quite a lot of times, probably 4 or 5 times, if not 6 times. Actually went to rehab, came out, relapsed, went to rehab, came out, relapsed, for about 5 times, 6 times. The last time I came out of rehabilitation, I went and actually sat down with a therapist. And initially I started seeing a therapist twice, I think it was twice a week. Then over time, it became once a week, and then once a month. And then now, I think it's been about 2 years, I haven't actually seen a therapist, something that I should definitely, I'll go back to again this year. And I was able now to start understanding, because I'd also been diagnosed with bipolar syndrome. So a lot of the things I was told or I was made to understand was that I eventually turned to alcohol or marijuana to try and self-medicate. Those are some of the conversations that I had with my therapist and my psychologist as well. So just to kind of answer it, I think initially, right from the beginning, I'd hate to say peer pressure, but right from the beginning, it was something I did maybe socially at school. Have a drink after school. And then, you know, you probably have a drink after school at the weekend. You have a drink with your mates. When you finish when you finish school, you have, you kind of start making it as a habit, you know. But it would be difficult for me to pinpoint exactly where and how that addiction came in. As I said, that it wasn't something that was overnight. It was something that, when I look back, I feel there was I had quite a lot of trauma maybe growing up that I did not deal with. I would say probably my teenage years, I was probably bullied at some point in time. And I had a few incidences that I probably did not deal with emotionally. And subconsciously, I was not able to communicate some of the pain that I went through. And I think over time, I tried to quench that pain. And over time, I used substances to try and quench that internal pain that I had. It kind of got out of control as time went on. And before you know it, you know, you've got other pains that are building up, you've got other traumas, or you've got other unreleased emotions that kind of build up. Mm-hmm. You have a problem, let me have a beer, or let me have 10 joints. So I think that's how my process was.
Wow, I hear that. I am just mind blown by, you know, what you're sharing. Like, I'm normally never speechless on this podcast. I always have to say, but I am extremely...
You're really not.
So that's saying something, Manota. And like, I just wanted to... I can't say this enough times. Like, thank you so much for like agreeing to come on and like share this story. I heard you speak about being bullied, you know, as a child, and so this is a two-part question, and you also spoke about being diagnosed with bipolar disorder. Would you like to just share a little bit more on these two, being bullied and bipolar disorder?
Yeah, I think it's only, as I said, I'm having to work on a lot of maybe going back, or I don't know if they say it's flashbacks, but at some point in time during my primary years, I was quite a big baby. I don't know whether it's politically correct to say fat, but I was a fat chap, or I was big boned or a big baby. So even in school, these are some of the things I always remember, is that when we went to get uniforms, I had to go out of school to get a tailor to make my shorts or to make my pants for my school uniform. And the kids would always laugh at me for that. I had a kind of a bigger bum, I guess, for a boy as well. So those were some of the things that I remember as a child, and kids constantly laughing at me, you know, and poking me, whether it was physical poking, whether it was also verbal poking. So those are some of the things that I experienced as a child. And I think I did not understand how deep they hurt me. When I kind of do a flashback, I do understand how deep they hurt me, because I think that was something that I would go home and I'd be very embarrassed and I'd be very angry about. So I think as time went on, those are some of the little things you kind of suppress. Subconsciously, you kind of suppress them. You don't talk about them. You kind of go home, and in our settings back, you know, in our African settings, bullying was not something that children spoke about, or I feel sad or I'm depressed. Back then were some of the things that we were not able to relay to our parents. As a grown up, as a parent now, I kind of have to understand that where my parents also came from, it was also a generational, it's also been a generational chain, that they grew up in certain types of conditions, and those kind of emotions were not emotions that were expressed. The bipolar part of it, I think, also comes, that was something that was, I was diagnosed with bipolar. I actually took medication, antidepressants, for quite some time. I think probably for the first 2 years after my sobriety kicked in. And that's a disease I am yet to fully understand, to see whether is it a generational disease, or did I pick it up at some point in time in my life? That's why I think when I stated to you that I did... I need to probably go back again to therapy, because I did not touch and I did not complete that healing process. So on the bipolar, it's something that I still have difficulties in understanding the root cause of it. I understood the symptoms and I was able to kind of take medication. And once I kind of start feeling those kind of symptoms of either being on a too high or being too low, I try to balance myself out. I weaned myself off the, well, I didn't wean it. It wasn't myself, but with therapy, I kind of weaned myself off the medication. But it's something that I would want to understand a bit further, hence the reason why I might not be able to speak about it a lot more up until maybe I've personally also understood it.
Wow. It's my turn to be speechless. Wow. Because I've known you, Manota, for some years, yeah? And I've never actually known, like, the background behind, you know, how you are where you are. So that is also, like, mind-blowing for me. And when you mentioned the bullying, my heart really, really just, like, it sank, you know, because I'm like, wow. You know, at the time, you probably didn't even think, you know, this would have a lasting effect. You probably maybe even brushed it off and maybe even suppressed. And then just you also saying that, you know, it's not something that you would bring up with your parents as well or your family as well. That really, like, hit hard and home for me. I think because I'm thinking of, you know, like raising a son myself, you know what I mean? It's like, damn, do I really, like, I really need to be able to look at those things, you know, and moving forward, because these are very real things that can happen in one's life. Like, we may brush things off just as parents or people, just people in general, I guess, like, oh yeah, they were bullied and whatever, and you move on, not really understanding like the long-term effect that it can have on a person. So like, that really like hit home for me, and I'm so glad that you were vulnerable and open enough to share that with us, because we need to be normalizing this.
We definitely need to be normalizing this, and like, I really like what you touched on the bullying, to say that most of the times when people talk about, oh, I was bullied, it's always, you know, just looked at like, oh, whatever, yeah, everybody was bullied. But like, people don't really, yeah, like Manota said, and like you said, why people don't recognize how heavy and, you know, how damaging that can be on one's mental health. And like, I just wanted to say to the young you, Manota, that I am extremely sorry for that poor experience that, you know, you were given by your peers in school. And I just have another follow-up question as also. I wanted to like just, You spoke about weaning yourself off of your antidepressants, because that's something that I also did in 2020. I decided to like slowly start, you know, getting off the antidepressants and whatnot. And it was a difficult journey, but like now I don't take antidepressants anymore. I just wanted to know, like, how has that journey been for you? And like, what were the challenges that you were facing while you were, you know, weaning yourself off of the antidepressants? Because I know that sometimes the brain is so unkind that is your only clutch for you to actually go out into the world and actually have conversations with people. You need to take your medication, otherwise it just doesn't work. How was that journey for you?
No, I think it was a difficult journey, because I've been sober 4 years. First year I totally suffered heavy depression. I literally would sit at home 3 weeks, I'd not come out of the house. When I started seeing a therapist, and I started taking, initially when I started taking the antidepressants, I felt better. You know, I felt strong enough to actually leave the house and go start having conversations with people. And then I start weaning myself, and I start, you become kind of, I don't want to say addicted to them, but you feel that you can't do anything without them. So that process was also like another kind of, you know, you're like, you know what, I've just managed to get myself off alcohol and off the use and abuse of marijuana. And then this thing that I'm drinking, that if I don't drink it, I have really bad nightmares. Or if I don't drink it, I don't wake up in a good mood, and I have to really push myself to be in a good mood. So I struggled with that as well, but I'm glad, you know, I'm kind of off them. I'm glad I'm able to understand my triggers, I'm able to understand what triggers me, and I'm also at the moment able to control those depressing thoughts coming and invading my mentality. At the moment, I'm able to keep them out of my gates. I think I've kind of mentally, I've put gates there, you know. So I close my gates now. I've closed my gates to those kind of thoughts. I think that's how I've tried to deal with it.
Wow. Oh, Colina, he was answering your question. Is that okay?
Yes, that is okay. I just wanted to point out that there's going to be a lot of wows in this podcast. Yeah. And I don't think one episode is going to cut it, Manota. Like,
no, it's not sufficient. Yeah, I'm literally even like jotting down, like as he's speaking, like, okay, I want to ask this, I want to ask that, I want to ask that. I'm like, I hope I don't like stumble over my words, because I just want to ask.
Same.
But I know that what I do want to ask, and this is, I guess, my curiosity and interest is, also from like a person having experienced, you know, substance use issues as well. I know that I've struggled, obviously, I mean, if it's a disorder, you struggle with getting off them, getting off the substances. But my question is, what actually led you to stopping and then staying stopped? Because that is where the issue is with you know, substances. So I want to know what led to the final stop, yeah? And what helped you maintain that sobriety? And then I'd also like to know, I don't know, you could mix it in with your answer. I'd also like to know what your life looks like now, like in terms of your recovery, holistically, like in terms of your social life, your social health, you know, your relationships, maybe financially as well, intellectually, creatively. What does it look like now? So two questions.
What was the final push? I think there were quite a few final pushes for me. I don't think it was one single one. I don't think it was one single push. The last time I was in rehabilitation, I went with a friend of mine to rehab. She had a different addiction. And we both came out, I think we both came out in December. By May, she had an overdose and died. I had stayed sober with alcohol up until that May. I was still smoking my marijuana. After her death, I think the day we buried her, I stopped smoking marijuana. So that is one event I feel that kind of touched me quite a lot. And I've also, I mean, I've got a wife, I've got children. My wife has also been quite instrumental in my addiction process. So have my children also, I think, been very instrumental in my addiction process. As I see them growing older, you know, I didn't want to be a 50-year-old person having constant problems with alcohol, having constant problems with marijuana. And these alcohol and the marijuana use and abuse and over-reliance of them got to a point where I was not able to actually earn any money anymore. So you've got a wife, you've got three kids, you're not earning money because of a single problem, you're not able to pay rent, you're not able to pay school fees. You know, basically you are the first born child, you know, because of your reliance on these on the drugs and the alcohol, and stopped being, I would say, maybe what is perceived as a man, you know, kind of thing, because I was not able to have a fruitful relationship with my children, nor have a fruitful relationship with my wife, because I was either drunk or I was too high. I couldn't earn a living. I earn a living now, and I think I've got quite a good relationship with my children. I'm most likely building rebuilding that partnership with my wife. I can pay rentals now. I can pay my kids' school fees. I can also look after family members. So answering your holistic question, it changed. 4 years of being sober, I feel like I'm in my fourth year of my second life. That's how I kind of have to look at it, that I'm in my fourth year of my second life, of a second chance that somehow someone out there was able to grant me. As I said, I can keep a job or I can keep my business running. Something 5-6 years ago, I realistically did not know it would happen. You know, I would dream about being sober. Even when I was drunk and high, I would say, no, I would really want to be a sober person, because I feel that in life I've got a lot more to give than being in the state that I was in. Because in the state that I was in, I felt I was very much in a prison. You know, I was basically in a prison. I was locked up. My mind was locked. So every year that I stay sober, I feel I'm walking further and further away from those prison doors.
Wow.
wormhole.
I cannot, I cannot contain the gems that you're just sharing and the Manota, you are such a blessing. You are such an extreme blessing. And I just wanted to let you know that I'm extremely proud of you for being able to, you know, pick your life back up and, you know, be able to just get back on track and being able to, like, do the things that, you know, I mean, take up your responsibilities and just do the things that, you know, you were set out to do. I cannot be prouder of anyone than I am right now. I have a follow-up question. As you were talking, you mentioned something surrounding, you know, like prison, you know, of the substance abuse. Can you equate that prison to, like, also struggling mentally?
That's how I looked at it. Really. I think when someone is struggling mentally, they are in a certain way in a prison. During the time I was using and abusing, I actually did find myself physically in prisons or in a police cell quite a few times in different districts of the country. And, you know, I kind of look back, and I have to do quite a lot of looking back, because those are some of these anchors that I've kind of put in my head that, you know, Manota, hey, if you ever think of drinking, always think how you felt the 5 days you were sat in a prison cell, not able to make a call, not able to talk to any of your relations because you either didn't have a phone, you had sold it, or the reason why you were there is because you were drunk, walking aimlessly at 1 o'clock in the middle of the night. The police stop you, they find you with drugs in your pocket, you know. I had to come out of my mental struggle. I say was a prison. I had imprisoned myself. No one else had imprisoned me. I had imprisoned myself. So I do relate. I have to put that kind of relationship in order for me to better understand it. And it's an anchor as well that I don't want to go back to self-imprisonment, because addiction is self-imprisonment. The day one says, hey, I've had enough of this addiction, is the day you give yourself that key to be able to unlock it. And then that journey needs other people to be able to assist you, because, you know, having a mental health problem, one sometimes does not recognize that I've got a mental health problem as well. It takes a lot of intervention for someone to actually recognize, to say, I do actually have a mental health problem. So it's like being in, you know, it's like being locked up.
Wow.
No, Mai, go ahead and ask the question.
Okay. I don't know if it's like a question, it's a comment. Just to reiterate, Colleen and I have both said this, that we're honestly so proud of you for being so vulnerable. I know that when I'm telling my story, sometimes I may not, like, you know, speak on everything, because not only does it make me uncomfortable, but I wouldn't want to make others uncomfortable. But that's something that I'm learning to, you know, find strength in more. So to hear you speak about these experiences so openly and really so naturally, as if it's like nothing, you know, it's inspiring for me. And I think you guys were talking about this, like, when you had jumped on the call, but I wanted to know, in terms of sharing your experience more widely, is that something that you do? Is it because obviously we know that, you know, with the history of substance use, being of service to others is a main component of recovery. So that is my question. Is it something that you're doing currently? I know you used to do it, but is it something you're still doing?
Well, as you mentioned, when you jumped on the call, we were talking about this, that I don't think I've done enough of it. I lost another friend, I think it was a year ago, Last year, I probably lost two friends. Last year and the year before, I've lost quite a few friends, and I've lost them all through alcohol or substance abuse. And these are people that I probably sat down, and maybe some of them I also counseled. And I think it's just only today that I'm actually talking about it. It hadn't clicked to me. And that is one of the reasons why I probably had stopped sharing my experiences, because I felt that, if I was able to have shared my, or if I was qualified, I think maybe those people wouldn't have died. Or there were a lot of ifs and buts, but it's something that I think I will start again. I will start going out and positively trying to talk to people, or trying to spread the message, or trying to share my journey. But I used to do it before. Yeah, we'd go into schools and we'd talk about our experiences, because I felt that my experience of someone who went through it would help other people. But the last 2 years, I lost a couple of friends, and I lost them in the alcohol and in the drug. And, you know, one always questions themselves, especially if you had a kind of relationship with these people, where you went and sat down and you spoke to them, and, you know, you find out that the person has gone back, started drinking, and is actually passed on. So that's what probably had stopped me. It's something that I need to be able to get over and carry on the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First of all, I just wanted to apologize to you and just, you know, pass my condolences for your loss. You know, I can imagine that losing friends to something that you also struggled with must be extremely devastating. And from my personal experience, but I know from watching a lot of people, I could say from my personal experience as well, to say that when something as devastating as loss happens, it's very easy to just go right back into that place and decide, okay, you know what, it's whatever. And I also just wanted to say that when we were talking before we started recording, to say you're qualified, you're equipped to actually go out there and speak from your heart, and considering how you have just poured your heart and just shared your story on this podcast, I am pretty sure a lot of people are going to listen. I am pretty sure there's going to be so many people whose lives are going to be changed just from listening to what you have to say. We're kind of running out of time, and I just wanted to say that I would like for us to do this again, to continue this conversation in hopefully what is a part two of this podcast, because I think this is too good a conversation. This is too important a conversation to be kept under 40 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. I definitely agree, Manota. I hope you're on board for that. Whenever you'd have the time again, because I also feel like there's a lot that we can go into. You know, it's a complex area. What I do want to say, just in closing remarks and stuff, Manota, when you are ready to share more widely on your experience, please don't hesitate to come my way and share on Art of Wellness as well. I just launched my recovery section, the recovery arm of Art of Wellness. I launched that on Friday. So please do feel free to come and share, either in the form of videos or just audios or stories or quotes or poems or however you'd want to communicate it, even through art therapy that you are into, in whatever way you'd want to, or whatever format. This is my formal invitation for you to share that on that platform as well.
No, thank you very much, ladies, for what I'd say probably is a therapy session, I guess. But sometimes talking is very therapeutic, to be able to share some of our experiences. And we hope that it gets to one ear, and someone listens to it, and it also changes their lives. And then a few years down the line, they're able to also share their story, which will also change someone's life. You know, it's all about how it's like a chain, really, because it was someone's story that changed my life, you know, and I'm hoping that by sharing, we care, and other people also understand that they are not alone in this, especially as you mentioned it, especially men. You know, currently these are things a lot of men find very difficult to discuss, whether it's culturally or whether it's just how us guys, boys, even the old men have been brought up, you know, that we don't share. Sharing is a sign of weakness, or talking about things emotionally are a sign of weakness. So no, thank you very much, ladies, for having me on, and yeah, let me know. I'll be quite happy to come back and probably look at a different aspect of the conversations that we've had today. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Manota. Like, thank you. I'm going to say again, I'm usually never speechless. Thank you so much for coming on. And I am looking forward to like doing this again on what, like I said, will hopefully be a follow-up conversation on this discussion. Mai, would you like to, do you have anything to say before you take us out with the disclaimer?
No, nothing to say. Oh no, sorry, I lie. Just thank you once again, Manota. Thank you once again, Manota. I know that we've been trying to do this for a couple of weeks, maybe months. So for us to finally sit down and for this to all come into the fruition that Genesis and I have dreamt of is literally amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a lovely night, Manota.
Good evening, have ladies. Thanks.
One second. Are we?
Disclaimer.
So we usually share a disclaimer when we're having these conversations, Manota and everyone else that's listening. Just to say that we are not professionals in terms of mental health. We may have, you know, a few certificates, etc., but as in terms of actually being mental health, full mental health professionals, that is what we are not. But we are basically meeting people in companionship by sharing this information and talking on this information and normalizing these conversations. We are meeting you in companionship.
Thank you so much, Mai. Until next time, guys, this has been the Little Mental Health Project, and Mai and I are hoping that we can stay a lot more consistent and like record a little more consistently. But otherwise, it's been such an honor, Manota. Good night, guys. Good night, Mai.
Good night. Bye. Good night, everyone. Bye-bye.